call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We have a quorum present. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from March 27th. Mr. Chair, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, would move approval of our minutes from March 27th, 2023.
All right. Chair Stevenson moves approval of the minutes of March 27th, 2023. Any discussion to that motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 27th, 2023 are approved. Members, the only bill on the agenda for today is House File 2680. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, I move that House File 2680 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Good. Chair Stevenson moves that House File 2680 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, to mark up this budget bill, we are going to move the DE amendment, review secondary amendments, and then adopt the amended DE amendment at the end of committee today. So, Chair Stevenson, would you like to move and describe the A23-0106 amendment?
Madam Chair, members, I move the A11 amendment. This amendment is an author's amendment, incorporates a number of changes. I'll just kind of go through some of the highlights.
We want to first move the A23 amendment.
The A23 amendment.
Yes.
I move the A23 amendment. It's the wrong amendment that, I'm sorry. I know
not
what
a,
happened.
Not a problem. We'll
the
start.
A23 amendment is, I would withdraw my motion on the 11, move the A23.
Very good. Chair Stevenson moves the A23 amendment.
All right. The A23 amendment is an author's amendment that makes a number of changes to the bill in various sections. It includes reporting requirements related to the grant to Exodus Lending so legislature can be adequately informed about how the funds are used and to making sure that they are used according to the instructions in the bill. It also changes a number of effective dates, particularly with regard to the insurance mandate portions in the bill. This reflects testimony that we heard in committee on Monday that a little later effective date would allow for insurance to better accommodate the new mandates. It adds an oncologist to the advisory committee in the PDAB. It also makes some changes to the unfair and deceptive practices language that is responsive to concerns about the vagueness of certain language and also the concerns about competitors being able to sue one another under a portion of the bill.
Thank you. Chair Stevenson just described the A11 amendment to the A23 amendment, and so we will begin here. Members, any discussion of the A11 amendment? I will move the A11 amendment to the amendment. Any discussion to the amendment to the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the A11 amendment to the amendment is adopted. The A3 amendment, Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move and describe the A3 amendment to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to talk about the A3 amendment. This has to do with a provision in the bill, the amendment as amended, because we'll adopt, I suspect, the A23 amendment as amended into the as replacement language at the end of the committee. But we've had a lot of discussion this session and previous sessions regarding the concept of payday lending and the fact that it reduces options for individuals who we've had testify both for and against that. And something that I found that was kind of interesting was that in one of the committees that we had, there's an appropriation that is coming forward that allows folks an alternative, if you will, competition to payday lending in the way of different loans. And those folks have testified a couple of times, and they were making a case for how they were helping folks. And I thought to myself, you know what? That's great. If you don't like payday lending, there's now an alternative in the marketplace for people to be able to have some competition. Again, competition, you can go to A or you can go to B, you can choose which vendor or which provider that you want. And so what I think is happening by the changes that are happening in the payday lending language in this bill is that we're changing the landscape and limiting some competition that building a bridge for for the new folks to be able to get in, but tying the hands of the current folks that are in. And I think that the consumers are smart enough, intelligent enough, and have informed themselves enough about what they want to do. And so the A3 amendment simply strikes the language to allow competition to continue between the different sources that that are out there, including the one that's being anticipated through the passage of this legislation.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Chair Stevenson?
Madam Chair, I ask members to vote no on the A3 amendment. I think that the payday lending provisions in the bill are important. I think that it's a long overdue consumer protection to do this. I would remind members that many other states have already eliminated the possibility for this abusive practice, including our neighbors in South Dakota and the U.S. Military. This is not a practice that we want to have continue in the state of Minnesota. We want people to not be subject to the debt trap that this practice creates, and so I'd ask members to reject the A3 amendment.
Members, any discussion to the A3 amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, Representative O'Driscoll. O'Driscoll, do you have any? Okay. All right, so members, hearing no further discussion, all in favor of the A3 amendment to the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, those opposed, say nay.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail, and the A3 amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A4 amendment to the amendment. Representative New Brinley, would you like to move and describe the A4?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A4 amendment. And this would delete the changes to Section 6 on page 149. And this is the provision that would allow for predatory pricing against smaller gasoline retailers. And I recognize if the amendment is accepted, we'd probably need to repeal the repealer in Section 24, but we can deal with that after we deal with this amendment. You know, we heard from advocates that they said that this would lower gas prices. However, you know, we heard actual data in committee and testimony in committee that it's not. It's not going to lower gas prices to do this. But I would suggest, you know, my family used to own a convenience store. We did not control or profit off of the gas that we sold. We also did not control the prices of the gas that we sold. And so we were at the mercy. We were at the mercy of the gas prices, the daily gas prices, to determine whether or not folks would be coming into our store. And by repealing this section, we are repealing some protections right now against predatory pricing that's going to sort of allow big guys to eke out little guys in this market in a way that I don't think we want to see. And I would ask for a yes vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative New Brinley. Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd ask for a no vote on the A4 amendment. As we had a good discussion on this bill in committee, which did receive favorable action by this committee and voted out. And I, you know, from my perspective, we talked about how there were only two commodities in the state of Minnesota that are subject to minimum markup, gasoline and milk, and that we haven't had need for this protection in any other analogous industry. We also talked about how most states do not have minimum markup provisions, and they have not resulted in there not being mom-and-pop gas stations in those states. I don't think that it's good policy to have the minimum markup, and so I support that provision of this bill, and I'd ask members to vote against the A4 amendment.
Members, any further discussion to the A4 amendment to the amendment? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative New Brinley, thank you for bringing this forward. Interestingly enough, this conversation has arisen as a result of an amendment that comes from a representative from the central Minnesota area. And so I've been kind of keeping an eye on what's happening there. And I mentioned earlier in the committee when we had the bill in front of us about some of the retailers who have gone out of business as a result of that, some of the smaller ones just because of the competitiveness in the marketplace. And interestingly enough, if you can believe it, there was another write-up this weekend about yet another smaller company. This time they didn't go out of business. They just chose to sell to a larger organization into a conglomerate because they just don't feel that they can compete in the marketplace because of all the market pressures that are there. So if you are a person who would like to see small business thrive and, you know, with one or plus employees within the organization, these are small mom and pop shops that are out there trying to run and earn a living, then you're going to vote yes on this amendment. Okay, you're going to vote yes, and you're going to say we're going to stand behind the small business owners who are probably going to be having a large amount of other regulation that's coming their way if some of the bills that are out there get passed into law here in the state of Minnesota. Or you're going to see these folks having to close their doors or having to merge with the large conglomerates who already probably will be exempt from some of the regulations because they offer different kinds of benefit packages that would be in excess of what is being contemplated here in state law. So again, it's a vote on whether you support small business or whether you support small business going away here in the state of Minnesota as I see it. And I suspect that when the bill author has a chance to respond to my comments, he will have some different ideas on this, but at the end of the day, it's really simply a math problem. And the math problem is you can either balance your books or you can't balance your books. And if you can't, you either close your doors or you sell your assets to someone else. That's how business ends up working. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Members, any further discussion to the A4? Representative New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for your comments. And I would just add to that in addition to this being a math problem, you can either balance your books or you can't. This is a unique commodity. You talked about how there are only two commodities in the state that have similar regulations on this, but this is unique. We need for folks who are selling fuel in the state of Minnesota to be able to balance their books because we can't afford to lose them. We can't afford to lose, frankly, the little guys, but we also can't afford disruptions in availability when those little guys go out of business. Fuel, like electricity, like other utilities in our state, they are regulated for a reason, and it's to make sure that we continue to have access. And I would ask for a yes vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? All right, seeing none. All those in favor of the A4 amendment to the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail, and the A4 amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A5 amendment to the amendment. Representative Niska, would you like to move and describe the A5?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And the A5 amendment is focused on cleaning up, I think, one thing that the chair has not yet cleaned up in the unfair and unconscionable acts provision. So I appreciate the chair's comments on his author's amendment that we're cleaning that up to focus it on dealing with consumers instead of just opening the doors for competitors to sue each other and have sort of an open-ended cause of action between businesses. For that, I think that to fully accomplish that, we need to delete sections 7 and 8. There was a miscommunication with the revisor's office, and so this doesn't include section 8 in the A5 amendment. But I did speak with Representative Stevenson about that, and I think it's important to focus, first of all, on what this doesn't do, which it doesn't do anything about the Attorney General's tools under the Unfair and Unconscionable Acts provision, which the testimony was really focused on giving the Attorney General tools in that area. This is just deleting the references in the Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act, which does not have any AG enforcement provision at all. It's only a private right of action with attorney's fees. And so I'm concerned that putting the Unfair and Unconscionable Acts provision into that part of the law will create some kind of unpredictable private rights of action. I would also note that this does not touch the 8.31 private right of action that would be available under under 369F.69, the way it would be amended to incorporate unfair and unconscionable acts, and it doesn't eliminate the additions to 325F.70 that Representative Freiberg had moved and that are included in this omnibus bill that would also give private rights of action to consumers when they're individuals or family farmers. And so this is really focused, I think, cleaning up a potential unintended consequence of putting this language also into the Unfair and Deceptive Trade Practices Act. I did email Representative Stevenson about it, and so I'm not going to ask for a vote on this today. But I think is an amendment that you should consider taking before this goes to the floor. So I'm going to withdraw the A5 amendment at this time.
Representative Niska withdraws the A5 amendment. Next, we have the A6. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move and describe the A6 amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the A6 amendment. The A6 amendment, it's kind of one of those things that it's the Trojan horse, right? You wheel the big horse into town, and it looks good, and then once the gates are closed, you open it up, and you get something you didn't bargain for. And we kind of already have seen this one. It's sort of like the version 2.0 of this kind of legislation. And what the A6 does is it says, you know what, we're going to take a pause. We're not going to include in our language in the bill today the information or the provision that we're going to, in essence, the Affordability Act that we saw in the federal level, right? The Affordable Care Act that disrupted the private health insurance market in just an unbelievable way. Premiums skyrocketing, companies pulling from the state of Minnesota, wanting to go ahead and offer products to be able to provide insurance and aid and assistance and help for people on that. We actually developed a reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota to support that. Extremely successful program. Other states are adopting this program. In droves and looking at this, and we know that we've got with our reinsurance program the support of our congressional leaders, bipartisan in Washington, wanting to get this done on a national level because we have kind of got a crown jewel here in the state of Minnesota on this. So why do I bring this up about the Medicare supplements? Well, Medicare supplements are usually purchased by persons who are 65 or older. Folks who are in a protected classification here in the state of Minnesota and many things where we require them to be given extra disclosures and time to get out of contracts and different things. So I'm wondering if we were to move forward based on past history with the ACA, would we see a market being destabilized in the Medicare supplement market with a very vulnerable population in the state of Minnesota, people who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond. And the cost of those premiums would probably end up going up. We may need a reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota for those supplements as well. And we have had many discussions, and those discussions last year, thankfully, culminated in us asking for a waiver again from the federal government, which was granted, and a 3-year funding that we were able to secure for the health insurance. And I'm kind of getting the idea this year that there isn't really a desire to do a reinsurance program. Maybe we'll have a chance to talk about that later on. But I don't know what we're going to do for these seniors. And the other thing that's important to remember is that many of the people who offer these supplements in the state of Minnesota, they're not even based in the state of Minnesota. So they just end up filing a notice with the commissioner's office and pulling out. And then we would have less options and less competition. Madam Speaker, I see that Mr. Brickwitty is here from the Commerce Department. I was just wondering if Mr. Brickwitty could come down and testify a little bit, because I have a couple of questions for him about the amendment, and maybe he can give us a little bit of background on the ACA, and maybe we can kind of see how past practices might lead to some future outcomes that may not be quite what we're hoping for.
Right. Assistant Commissioner Brickwitty, you can come up to the table, introduce yourself, and Representative O'Driscoll, you can proceed with your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brickwitty, good to see you again, sir. You kind of heard the conversation. You've been around the department long enough, and we've worked on this topic together with the ACA. My question to you is this. Do you think that from the things that the department has seen, that this committee and seniors in the state of Minnesota should be concerned about price fluctuation in a negative direction as a result of pulling out the stops and not requiring underwriting based on what we've saw in the insurance market with health insurance?
Commissioner Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, for the record, Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner from the Commerce Department. My apologies, Representative O'Driscoll. I was trying to get a computer plugged in into an outlet that was working in the back, so I was not listening to the beginning part of your presentation. But to your question, I think two different markets, as you're well aware, right? We're talking Medicare products versus individual markets, state-regulated health insurance for people who are purchasing their own insurance. I think there could be price impacts if there are changes to underwriting. There are states that do not allow for underwriting, like New York, for their Medicare supplement products after the first open enrollment period, which I understand to be the intent of what we're trying to change in this particular proposal that Representative Liebling originally offered in the House. From the amendment, the language that's incorporated in the A11 amendment delays the effective date of the open enrollment period by a year. I think that would allow the department to do some analysis of what potential price impacts could be, along with Medicare supplement offers here in Minnesota, while also creating a special enrollment period for individuals who are going to be affected by the public health emergency unwinding, who may be coming off of public programs and may now be eligible for Medicare supplement products, but otherwise may not be able to access that market without going through underwriting. So if they had a pre-existing condition, they may not be able to access that. So I think this represents a compromise to allow people who are going to be affected by the public health emergency to access products without going through underwriting, and also gives the department and the health plans a little bit of time to provide more information to the legislature in advance of the rest of the proposal taking effect next session or next year, so that during next session, legislators could take a second look at it.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Brickwitty, I really appreciate your comments, because what I heard you say was that if we didn't have it in the bill, we wouldn't be confusing seniors right now, and that it could be investigated and it could be discussed. And once we had a better idea from your department as to the unwinding and things, we could bring a plan forward that would be a well-thought-out plan, instead of confusing seniors about, is this the regular open enrollment period under federal law, or is this a special state supplement? Again, your department deals with a lot of inquiries and has had legislation and have dealt with folks who are in the 65-plus group. And we know that there can be confusion and that they don't necessarily always know the answers to this. So if we continue forward with this, we're going to create confusion and cost. If we pull it, give you a chance to work on it and bring a proposal back, that may be better for everyone involved, instead of trying to hit an artificial target date out there. Would you agree with that, Mr. Brickwitty?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I would agree with most of it. I think the department has heard from some seniors who are very much in favor of Representative Liebling's bill as it is written today. I think this provides the opportunity for the department and health plans to provide some additional information to legislators and get maybe a fuller picture of whether or not there will be or could be price impacts. I think that is a possibility. It's also possible that there may not be price impacts. I think we just don't have a clear picture right this second. So I would agree with most of what you said. I'm sort of restating it in my own words, I suppose.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not going to belabor the point, because I think we all know where this is probably going to end up, and it's going to not be in the favor of seniors right now in the long run. My thoughts are, Mr. Brickwitty, you said you agree with a lot of the stuff I said and some of the stuff I didn't agree with. If we had legalized gaming in the state of Minnesota, I would bet on my position before I bet on your position with a bookmaker. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Brickwitty.
For the record, I'm not expressing a position on behalf of the department. I'll leave it at that. I think the health plans can speak for themselves if they would like to, if they see the potential for price impacts. I think there's also a tremendous amount of opportunity for consumers to have access to products without going through underwriting. So there are advantages, certainly, for consumers as well. The price impacts, I think, I would put as a question mark.
Representative Woodruff, the final follow-up?
You bet. Mr. Brickwitty, I think you have provided enough question for the committee and uncertainty that we should just simply be voting yes for this. Again, you're telling us you don't know for sure the outcomes on this. We can handle this in a much more expedient way by doing what we need to do, collecting information and addressing it before we can create confusion in the marketplace. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I wasn't going to speak on this, but since it's my bill that's being discussed and that the motion is to remove my bill from the omnibus, I think it's important for me to say something here because I think the bill that is in this bill is a very pro-senior bill. You know, people don't choose to have pre-existing conditions. They don't choose it. Health insurance, people think health insurance is supposed to be about giving people health care. And I think that what this shows is that some maybe don't think it's about health care. They think it's about something else. You know, I think that a vote for this amendment is a vote against seniors. Seniors deserve to be able to get coverage. If you have a pre-existing condition and you cannot get coverage, the costs don't go away. The need for health care doesn't go away. It just shifts somewhere else. And a lot of times where it shifts is to uncompensated care. People get sick, more sick, and have higher costs than they would have because they weren't able to get the care they should have gotten. So there are a lot of downstream effects to this. As Mr. Brickwitty pointed out, other states have done this and done it successfully. And I think that the amendment in the A11 is a very good compromise because I think there is some, you know, we want to make sure this works. We want to make sure that it is the best for the most people. But just to take it out, you know, we've had it the other way for years and years and years. And really, I think it's sort of suffered a little bit from legislative neglect because it's not one of these things we really think about that much. But it's about time we line this up with the way we do health insurance otherwise in this state, and that is to eliminate the underwriting and make sure that people can get insurance and that we spread the risk across a larger pool. That is what it, at the end of the day, I think is supposed to do. So I'm just grateful to the chair for including this, happy to, you know, agree to the amendment that's here because I do think it offers, you know, a little bit of caution that I think we do want to make sure that we get this right. But I absolutely urge members to oppose this anti-senior amendment.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Brickwood, if you could just answer one more question. My question is, has the department done an analysis of the premium impact in New York to have a sense of what might happen here?
Mr. Brickwood.
Madam Chair, Representative New Brindley, no.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems like then we should probably have some analysis. We should probably have some idea of what this is going to look like. As other states have done it, there should be data available. We should be able to do an analysis to see what the impact would be before we pass this into law. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any further discussion to the A6 amendment to the amendment? Chair Stevenson, any?
I think that Chair Liebling did the best possible job of defending her bill, and I agree with everything that she said, and I further agree that the A11 amendment obviates the need for the A6 amendment, so I'd ask for a no vote.
Okay. Members, all in favor of the A6 amendment to the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail, and the A6 amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A7 amendment to the amendment. Representative Doubt, would you like to move and describe the A7?
I would. Thank you.
Is this one working? Can you hear me? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. This one's missing, so I got to lean in. I'd like to offer the remove the A7 amendment. This is an amendment that basically would, and just as a point, Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A8 amendment after this one. The A7 amendment is an amendment that would basically just put the bill in the same format as the Senate bill, which is no policy. The Senate's been really clear that they don't want policy in their finance bills. This is a finance bill to fund the accounts in state government that this committee has jurisdiction over. So this amendment would just take all of the non-fiscal related, all of the policy out of the bill that does not have a fiscal impact, that doesn't belong in a budget bill. So this would pair us up more evenly with the Senate, and I would request members to vote for that.
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, members, I'm shocked that a former Speaker of the House would be so deferential to the Senate, and I will not be. I would ask for a no vote.
Members, any further discussion to the A7 amendment? Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. Since Representative Doubt's former role in the House was referenced. I was wondering if Representative Dahl can yield to a question.
Sure. He will yield, Representative O'Driscoll. So,
Representative Dahl, riddle me this. If there's two bills in the Senate and there's one in the House, how do you reconcile that one? One's a policy, one's a finance, and you have a policy and finance bill. How do you make that happen when you're missing pieces in the other chamber?
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for the thoughtful question. It is what we do here in the legislature. From time to time, you find out that these bills don't match up, and what I'm trying to do is just save some headaches in the future by offering this. So what we should do is send out two separate bills like they are, so you get those bills to match up evenly, and then what you would do is you would put members from each chamber and likely from each Commerce Committee onto a conference committee, and they would sort out the differences in those bills. What will happen without that is we will send policy provisions into a conference committee that does not match up with their policy bill. It will only match up with their finance bill. And then you end up with people adding amendments that the Senate has never heard and or removing stuff, and that's the sort of dark of night stuff that people don't like. So, you know, this is just a transparency thing that I think will help us kind of interact with the Senate. The Senate has made some very strong opinions about not having policy items in their finance bills. So, you know, I think this just would help everybody. And we have made no, I just asked for an amendment that would remove all policy as a principle that we should line up with what the Senate's doing. So I have not discriminated against any policy here. So I just pulled all the policy out, assuming it would travel in a different bill. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, former leader, I should say former Speaker Dowd, for the insight and in how a bill becomes a law here on Schoolhouse Rock.
Members, any further discussion to the A7 amendment to the amendment? Mr. Chair, I'll go to you to perhaps talk about your storied history of negotiating with the Senate and Conference Committee.
Record speaks for itself, Madam Chair. Yes or no?
All right, very good. Members, all in favor of the A7 amendment to the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. No. The motion does not prevail, and the A7 amendment to the amendment is not adopted. We will move on to the
Madam,
A8.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to move the A8 amendment. This is an amendment that would basically remove the transfer out of the premium security account for, if I can find my spreadsheet, $275,775,000 that happens in fiscal years 26, that happens in the 26-27 biennium. So this would basically remove that provision. Obviously, the premium security account houses the money that funds the reinsurance program. The reinsurance program is something that we put in place when I was the speaker, and that program was as a result of the ACA and the Democrats' adoption of the ACA here in Minnesota, causing skyrocketing premiums in the individual marketplace and people basically fleeing the individual marketplace, folks going without insurance. You know, it really was a really bad time, and frankly, that reinsurance program, we were one of the first adopters in the country of that. It became a model. Many other states have done that. It actually resulted in a real reduction of more than, I think the number is like 36% reduction in premiums for those folks in the individual marketplace. It provided the stability. That program was reauthorized for 5 years last year. They funded it for 3 years knowing that it likely would run surpluses, which it has. And that money will fund it for likely five. By the time we get to that fourth and fifth year, we will likely have enough money in that program to fund it for the fourth and fifth year without needing any legislative action. It will just be funded. Taking this money out and using this transfer to remove the money will bring certainty that there will not be money there to fund a fourth and fifth year, and will result in at a very minimum an increase of 36% again to those, and probably much higher than that to the folks in the individual marketplace. And frankly, we want people to have choice and freedom in deciding if they want to buy their own insurance policy. And we want them to have enough products in the marketplace that make that competitive and make it affordable for them. It costs more right now than I would like it to, but this program has really brought stability to that individual marketplace, and it has taken real action in probably more than any other program that I have seen in our time here at the legislature. This has literally brought down premiums more than 36% on average for folks in that individual marketplace. So this has worked. It has worked so well that other states are doing it, and I think this is a no-brainer. So I would ask for adoption of this amendment, and I would request a roll call vote.
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, a few thoughts on the amendment. I'm going to ask members to vote no. I had anticipated, or I thought about asking the chair to rule the amendment out of order. I did say twice to the committee on Monday that we would not entertain amendments that threw the bill out of balance. This it's hard to imagine how an amendment could throw the bill more out of balance than this amendment, which would put us $275 million over our target in the tails. And if we were to adopt this amendment, it would promptly be added back in by the Ways and Means Committee, the transfer would, as they brought the bill back into balance with the budget resolution. But I'm also fine with us just voting it down because it's not a good idea to get rid of this transfer. You know, your question, Madam Chair, a minute ago about my history in negotiating bills in conference committee actually kind of presaged this exact amendment because I was on the conference committee that reauthorized the reinsurance program last year. And Representative Dowd was in the room when we struck the deal on that. And so Representative Dowd knows that the deal was that we were reauthorizing the program for 5 years, but funding it for three. And that was the deal that we struck House and Senate and voted for last year. The good news is that deal ended up being a lot cheaper than we anticipated when we struck it. 3 years of reinsurance is going to cost the state of Minnesota a lot less than what we thought a year ago. But the deal was authorize five, pay for three. This bill does not end the reinsurance program. It doesn't say we're not going to do it after 3 years. It continues to be authorized for five. And a future legislature could appropriate money to continue to operate the program. But that's a choice that isn't ripe today. And it's not ripe in particular because from the very beginning, people have always described reinsurance as a bridge to something else and not a permanent solution. And as much as we have made it a permanent solution, it is really not. It is the state subsidizing the individual market to hold premiums down. And I have supported it and voted for it and authorized bills to reauthorize it. And I think it was the right decision. Premiums were flat and actually in some cases decreased last year because of the operation of the reinsurance program. But if there's a better way to do this, we should do that. We should still think of reinsurance as hopefully a bridge to a different healthcare system. And I know that in other committees, there's talk. And in fact, in this committee, we had a bill that came through this committee that talked about what could be next. And we've got a couple more years before this question is ripe. There's no reason why funding the program today is necessary. So I'm going to ask members to vote no today to keep to the deal we struck less than a year ago. And I will just one last thing is I'll say that, you know, a significant feature of the deal that we struck last year from my perspective was that we were going to have a whole biennium where we didn't have to talk about reinsurance. And Representative Dowd has robbed me of that today. And I will never forgive you for that, Representative Dowd. Just kidding. So ask for no vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm reminded of Charles Dickens at this time. It's the tale of two cities. It's the best of times and it's the worst of times. Moments ago, we offered an amendment to take out so we weren't rushing through and destabilizing the Medicare supplement market. But yet, here we are taking money away from a market that has found stabilization for the smallest, most vulnerable group of people in the state of Minnesota, small business owners, individuals who are not in the able to buy through a group plan, not covered by a group plan. While one elevator is perceived to be going up, the elevator is coming down. I just can't believe that in a matter of minutes. One idea is good, one idea isn't good. Please vote yes on the Dowd Amendment to preserve insurance. We may actually need that money for the Medicare Supplement Reinsurance Program in a few years as well.
Members, any further discussion before I give it to Representative New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just add to this conversation, you know, we have an $18 billion budget surplus, and this $275-ish million is really critical for keeping health care costs under control for Minnesotans. And we are in a precarious position right now. The total budget has been proposed by our Democrat colleagues spends all of the money. And does not, it puts us in a dangerous position for the next biennium. And I would be really, really cautious about spending the money that has been set aside specifically for the purpose of keeping health care costs in check for Minnesotans. And it's done so very, very effectively. Members, if there is one thing we should protect, it's this.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson. I do appreciate the work that you've done on this issue. I know that you were part of that process that got it renewed last year. I think, you know, and I also want to just say thank you for letting us have this conversation in the committee. I think all we wanted was to have 10 minutes to talk about this, and I think the issue does deserve a vote rather than, you know, rule it out of order or say that it throws the bill out of balance. This way we're not having an argument about the rules, we're just talking about the issue. And we do really feel like it's an important issue. We feel like it has served the purpose of stabilizing that individual marketplace, and it has literally lowered premiums by a huge amount. And that's real money in Minnesotans' pockets. And it means that there's more people insured in the state of Minnesota. More people can afford that insurance. And this isn't a product that's for every Minnesotan, but I don't know, the last I remember there was, I think, 150,000 or maybe it's higher than that, Minnesotans that are buying their insurance through that individual marketplace. And they do pay a premium for this insurance, but there's no reason to make them pay more. So this is a pretty important provision. Just on the overall budget, I want to say, for those of you paying attention, we have about a $17.5 billion surplus. There's about a $5.5 billion structural surplus in the tails. The targets, by the way, are out of balance by about $3 billion, maybe $3.5 billion if you're doing all the math. They're you know, obviously got to get that money from somewhere. So not only are we spending every dime available in the current biennium, but we're spending $3 billion more than every dime available in the tails. And we're putting the state in a very precarious situation fiscally, moving into what could be, you know, potentially an economic downturn. And this state's tax code is incredibly volatile to spikes in whether the economy is roaring. We have huge surpluses, and when we have a downturn in the economy, that's usually followed by a year or two by a huge deficit in our state budget. I'm afraid that this current budget that's before this body is going to send this state budget into a huge deficit 2 and 4 years from now. And I don't want to be the guy that says I told you so, but not only are they spending every dime available of general fund money, but they're borrowing money from here. They're stealing money from the Healthcare Access Fund. Literally, this is digging every dime out of the out of the couch cushions that has been hidden away, and those are for specific purposes. As Representative New said, in this case, this money is to make sure that people can have affordable health care and health insurance in that individual marketplace. Affordable, I say that with air quotes. I wish it was better. But this program has really offered the kind of stability, I think, that has allowed people to have some peace of mind to buy the products in this marketplace. I will remind folks that when we implemented the ACA here in Minnesota, that we spent on MinSure $400 million building a website that didn't work, when the state of Utah built the same product for $600,000. ACA in the state of Minnesota has been an absolute disaster. It has been bad for Minnesotans. It has increased out-of-pocket costs. It has increased deductibles multiple three, four, five times. And to the point where I would say that many of these people are not really insured because they can't afford to pay their deductibles. I couldn't agree with the chair, not the current chair, but the acting chair of the committee, but Representative Stevenson, Chair Stevenson, that reinsurance was always supposed to be a bridge to another place. Find that other place. Let's work together. Let's roll up our sleeves and find that place. In the same way that we found reinsurance to be a solution to help those people temporarily, let's find what that ultimate place is. And that ultimate place is not a public option where there is no private option. That place is something that will have competition in the marketplace. It will have ownership and skin in the game by people who are insured, so that we don't have overuse in the marketplace, and rationing of healthcare and unaffordable costs. You can look to Maine or Massachusetts or Connecticut or whoever it was that tried to go to a single payer program not that many years ago, and they got about halfway into it and they turned right back around and marched back out when they saw how much it was going to cost. There is no, in the history of the world, situation where the government has provided a service without any competition and without any innovation at an affordable cost to their citizens. We can find a creative solution, but we have to work together to do it. And now is the time. And I'll roll up my sleeves and help the chair find that you know, the other end of this bridge. And I'd love to be part of that. I think it does exist, but it is not a single payer system. And I fear that that's what folks. I fear that that's why this money is being removed, because they're buying themselves time and to get to the 2 years from now where we will end this program and force people to move to a single payer system that will be unaffordable at a time when we've put our state budget into chaos, into deficit, and we will as a state not have the resources available to move to that single payer system that I think in the back of their minds there are people in this room that might be planning. It's if you just look into your crystal ball, you will find out it cannot happen and it will not happen. And so this amendment today was just designed to give us an opportunity to talk about the fact that it's not a good situation to remove this money and provide more instability to people that have been through a pretty rough road with as a result of the ACA here in Minnesota. So thank you. Sorry for the long soliloquy on stuff that I shouldn't even know anything about. But this is important stuff to the 150,000 or so Minnesotans that are in that individual marketplace. So, again, I'd renew my motion and request a roll call vote.
The clerk will take the roll. Chair votes
no.
Cotiza Watun, no. Chair Stevenson.
No.
Stevenson, no. Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Bierman.
No.
Bierman, no. Representative Cha.
No.
Cha, no. Representative Doubt.
Yes.
Doubt, aye. Representative Dotseth.
Dotseth, yes.
Dotseth, aye. Representative Freiberg.
No.
Freiberg, no. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, no.
Cleavorn, no. Representative Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Representative Liebling.
No.
Liebling, no. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Niska.
Yes.
Niska, aye. Representative Perryman.
Yes.
Perryman, aye. Representative Farr.
Yes.
Farr, aye. Representative Tapke.
No.
Tapke, no.
There being seven ayes and nine nays, the motion is not, the motion did not prevail and is not adopted. Now to the underlying amendment, members, is there any discussion? Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, as I was reading the, I believe it was the, I'm going to have to go back here. I want to say it was the A11 amendment. There we go. And it has to do with something that Mr. Carlson had said, and he was looking at me when he was saying it on Monday, that the provisions have been included back into, I'll get everybody on the same page here. It's in the A23, and it has to do with lines 9.1 through 9.3. And he said, you know, and this has to do with the bringing medical coverage into a liability policy here in the state of Minnesota, that third-person coverage, that if you injure someone else through the operation of your vehicle, you would not somebody in your own home or somebody in your own household or somebody that you're related to. And he said, we've taken care of the criminal conduct part of that. I was wondering if the chair or someone else could explain what this means on line 9.2. Criminal conduct that's intentionally causes an injury. I don't know how that would be interpreted. Maybe the bill author or Mr. Carlson, I don't know if he's here today. He in the past has provided feedback on that. I'm just looking for some explanation as to what that language is, because that's not the language that was in the bill originally, but he kind of led us to believe that it was back in there. But it's in a different form. I'm just wondering if someone can provide some clarity on
that
for
us. Chair Stevenson.
Yeah, Representative O'Driscoll, Madam Chair. So this issue, I just want to say, I don't think, even before we talk about the language in the bill, I want to just point out something that I almost said in the original hearing on this and then waited to make sure I was right, but I'll say now. So the bill says that there are certain permitted exclusions and some prohibited exclusions, and it says a policy can't have a prohibited exclusion. What it does not say is that the only exclusions that are permitted exclusions. That was all, that maybe it was mumbo jumbo. What I'm trying to say is that this permitted exclusion language is not a complete list of all the exclusions that could be in an insurance policy. This is a safe harbor provision for specific exclusions. But there are other exclusions that are neither prohibited nor permitted under this bill that could be in there. So I don't think that this issue that was discussed before was ever really a problem, because the type of exclusions you're concerned about are not prohibited under the bill. But what Mr. Carlson has put back into the bill is criminal conduct, is saying, to be very clear, that criminal conduct that intentionally causes an injury is a permitted exclusion, adding it into the safe harbor, to be extra clear about that. But it was never in the prohibited exclusion category.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Stevenson, thank you for that clarification, because I suspect we'll be seeing more, maybe not in this branch of government, but in the third branch of government, in the judicial, where there may be some appeals on this and the like. And that really helps us to get legislative intent that if someone's actually committing a crime or criminal activity and there's an injury that results, that could be something that could be excluded from coverage in the policy. So that does provide, I think, some clarity for me on that. I do have, maybe some others have some questions, but I was just kind of taking care of some housekeeping things, and when we are ready to wrap, I'll just have some comments for our side.
Sure. Members, any further discussion to the underlying amendment? Seeing none, I guess Representative O'Driscoll.
I didn't know we were coming back that fast. But the reason you heard our members talk and expound quite a bit on the amendments, and I do thank you for the indulgence on that, is we looked at this bill and we saw that there were a lot of provisions in here that we thought were moving too fast and kind of getting a bit over the top of your skis. Hopefully we won't be using that analogy too long, because spring hopefully will be here and we won't have to be worrying about snow. But I digress. Here's the issue. There are a lot of things that are in this bill, and not only just this bill, but in other bills that are transpiring this session, that I have never seen an engaged electorate that I have this year in Minnesota. I'm just talking about the Democrats who are coming to me and saying, I can't believe that this is happening in my district. They view this as overreach right now that's in here, and they say, you know, maybe what makes sense is when we have balanced government, where the Republicans control some things and the Democrats control some things, and there's a medium balance on here. And maybe government takes a little bit longer to work that way, but at least we get better results on this. When we looked at this bill and we sat down, because we took it very, very seriously, and we said, what provisions in here would be things that we felt that our counterparts would agree with us on, things that we've heard. We have evidence and experience, facts that show that some of these things are problematic, that we would have really believed that through our conversations today and through our work and bringing evidence and information that our Democrat colleagues would have agreed to tap the brakes on some of these provisions, take them off, send them back to the pit stop, work on them again, and bring them back out on the track. But today we are learning that that's not what's going to happen. And I fear for Minnesota, I fear for small business, I fear, for a lot of folks and their ability to be here in Minnesota. One of the areas that this committee does have jurisdiction in, and that is the real estate industry. And I have a lot of close connections to the real estate industry. And visiting with people in real estate, I've heard something that I've never heard in earnest that's being shared with me this year. And that number one thing is, I am looking to sell my home because of the political climate in Minnesota. Let that sink in. These are folks who have lived here probably all their lives are saying, I'm going to sell my home and move somewhere else, citing the political climate in the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair and members, a no vote would be the appropriate vote on this bill today, unless your goal is to put more regulation on Minnesotans who are watching. We'll call the real estate folks, and the only folks who are going to get rich on this are the people who help people sell homes, because those folks are looking to move out of the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair, thank you for the time. Representative Stevenson, thank you. A no vote, please.
Representative Dowd, do you have anything to add after the minority leads close? Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Representative Stevenson, final comments.
Yeah, and I'm just going to make my overall final comments. I know we're voting on the amendment now, but I'm going to just speak to the, this is the amendment that adopts the provisions that are at issue. I'm going to make closing comments overall at this point and just say this is a really good bill that we are putting together in this committee. This committee has done really, really excellent work this year that I know Minnesotans will be proud of. We have adopted a number of important provisions in this DE amendment, and we've discussed some of them. I do want to take a moment and highlight a few of my favorites. I'm not going to go through everything that's in the bill. There's a lot of really good policy in this bill, but I do want to highlight just a few that I really like. I really like Representative Tabke's bill on life insurance. Some of the most moving testimony that I can recall hearing, not just in this committee, but in any committee in the legislature, came on that bill, and we are going to do that. We're going to correct that issue in law and make sure that people who are suffering immense loss aren't double victimized by being improperly denied their life insurance. We're going to finish the work that we started a couple years ago on the Student Borrowers Bill of Rights by adding a student loan advocate to the Department of Commerce. Student loan debt, it's the second largest source of debt in our country now. It's more student loan debt than mortgage debt in our country, which is very alarming. And what's even more alarming is a lot of people get into trouble without even realizing where they're going. And we need someone who's going to stand up for them and help them navigate that system. You know, every time I go out and talk to people in my community, whether it's at a town hall meeting or at a when I go out door knocking, I hear about the outrageously high cost of prescription drugs every time. And those stories are among the hardest ones to hear, because you hear stories about people choosing between paying the rent and paying for their medication, rationing food or rationing their pills. Those are choices Minnesotans should not have to make. And we have in this bill two excellent provisions, one from Representative Howard that will ensure that whether it's insulin or EpiPens or other life necessary equipment, that there's a stable cost and an affordable cost for those medications, but also the prescription drug price gouging and prescription drug affordability board provisions that really have the opportunity to reverse the soaring price of prescription drugs and make sure that Minnesotans can actually afford the medications that they need to live. I was just listening to NPR earlier this week, and there was a story, I don't know if other people heard it, about right to repair in other states, and it was an incredible story about people who are who make use of a wheelchair and how that has been a life-changing experience to have the ability to modify their own wheelchair without having to call out a technician multiple times. I was really proud that we are doing Representative Fisher's digital fare repair bill when I heard that NPR story. And then I just want to lastly mention one of my very favorite bills of this session is the age-appropriate design code. And I was looking at our packet and some of the materials in our packet today, and it's just very sobering stuff. You know, we have a letter here that says that teens who spend five or more hours a day on social media are 71% more likely to have one or more risk factors for suicide than those who spend less than an hour a day. And that's a terrifying number when you consider 81% of 14 to 22-year-olds say they use social media either daily or almost constantly. The age-appropriate design code is a good thing to do. It is not anywhere close to what we need to do on this subject, but we have to get started. The statistics are just mind-boggling when you look at this. 75% of the top social media platforms use AI to recommend children's profile to strangers. What are we doing? I was reminded in this letter, there's a quote here. It was my favorite moment in President Biden's State of the Union a couple years ago when he said that we must hold social media platforms accountable for the experiment they're conducting on our children for profit. And that is exactly what's happening. An experiment that we're conducting on our children for the profit of a few enormous companies, and we have no idea the long-term impact. So that might be my favorite thing that's in this whole bill, and I'm glad we're going to adopt it today and move it out of committee. I ask for a yes vote.
Very well said, Mr. Chair. Chair Stevenson renews the motion. Oh, sorry, we're on the underlying amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the A23-0106 amendment as amended is adopted. You already did your final comments, so Chair Stevenson will renew his motion that House File 2680, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor, please say aye.
Chair.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I would like a roll call, please.
Representative O'Driscoll requests a roll call. The clerk will take the roll. This is a good bill. We should vote for it.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Cha.
Aye.
Cha, aye. Representative Doubt. Doubt, no. Representative Dotseth.
No.
Dotseth, no. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft, aye. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Niska.
No.
Niska, no. Representative Perryman.
No.
Perryman, no. Representative Farr.
No.
Farr, no. Representative Tapke.
Aye.
Tapke, aye.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2680, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Nonpartisan staff is authorized to make any technical changes necessary to reflect the will of this committee. And members, before we adjourn, I'll give it back to Mr. Chair, as it's the final scheduled meeting of the committee thus far.
Yeah, and thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I won't do the typical wrap-up speech now because we definitely are meeting at least one more time. I don't know when, but we will meet again. We have at least one bill to move through the committee at some point. But I appreciate everyone's good work and look forward to seeing you after the break.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Stevenson, we're meeting one more time. You must have a subject matter that you are thinking about for that meeting. Are you able to share that with us today? I suspect it's not showing Polaroids from what we did throughout the committee.
I do like the idea of a committee slideshow, Simon. But, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I mean, House File 2 is in this committee's possession. It's called House File 2 for a reason. It's pretty important to our caucus. I suspect we will hear that bill.
Thank you.
All right.
I wouldn't bet against you, just so you know.
And I'm a co-author of the bill, which might be another sign that's going to be heard.
Members, we are adjourned.